Hi, I'm Austin.
I'm Josh.
I'm Justin.
Hey guys, have you seen North by Northwest? all right, so we have one Justin and one no Josh. A bunch of times, Justin. Sorry, that's what I was trying to say. A bunch of times.
One
Ooh.
Justin and one Josh. That's what we got here. And one Austin.
Yeah, as far as we know. I could put on an echo effect at any time for any
I
of
assume
these.
you've seen this as well, Austin.
It is on my list, so
It is your movie, I
it
suppose,
is
that
my movie.
you've seen it.
What we do here on the podcast for people who haven't listened before, first timers just need a refresher because it's been a while since we've been here. The people who haven't seen the movie give a brief rundown, a description, if you will, based solely on the title. This one, North by Northwest, has influenced so many things: movies, TV, video
How's it?
games. This is in the zeitgeist hard. But I'm willing to bet
Huh.
you have no idea how that, like, how.
This might be one of those ones where I'm aware a couple scenes or lines, but I don't know that they're related to this movie at all. Like when you say title, I got
Do
nothing.
you know who made this movie?
Since you're asking that question, I'm going to say Hitchcock.
Hey, bullseye. This is,
Which, by the way, we've done Hitchcock on the show before.
we have
You really liked Rope.
One of
No,
Josh's favorite movies, Rope.
we've
We
done
did
Hitchcock twice because
Fly
he
and
also did
Cronenberg.
Psycho.
Psycho.
Not Fly. He didn't do
Who was
Fly. It's
Fly?
Cronenberg.
Cronenberg, right? That's the other
God,
name.
Alfred Hitchcock's The
Ooh,
Fly.
I'm down. I'll watch that any day. Can somebody make a fan cut of this?
Or Cronenberg's North by Northwest.
Yeah. I was about to say something really pivotal to the plot, but then I kept myself because Josh hasn't seen it yet. Josh, what do you think this movie's going to be about? And do you want to know the year before you guess? Because you like Hitchcock.
Sure, that'll help a little because this is almost not quite a nothing title. I've had worse titles before, I forget.
This is also almost a black and white film. This is 1959.
Okay, that doesn't change much.
Do you have you seen a lot of 1959 movies?
Can't say that I have. Have we seen any 50s movies on the podcast before? Rope.
Rope,
Rope was
definitely.
Rope 50s?
Rope was a 48.
Was it?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Closest movie we've seen of him was Psycho, which was a year later. Psycho was 1960. This is 1959.
This may be our only film. Wait, from the 50s. Planet of the Apes is hard 60s, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
You don't get a film like that from the 50s.
No, that's definitely
That's 60,
60s.
68. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to say this is our first movie from the 50s, tentatively. Listeners, correct us if you have any encyclopedic
Have we
knowledge.
done like the Maltese Falcon or anything?
No.
Oh, I've seen Maltese Falcon.
You have?
Yeah, I took a noir like literature film class when I was in
Isn't that
college.
so appropriate that out of all of them, Josh has seen The Maltese Falcon?
It's so good.
Like,
I remember liking
I hear that's the best one. I
Right.
hear the Maltese Falcon is the one I have to see, the coveted object. I also love to eat red herring. But
One
okay.
of Alfred Hitchcock's favorite dishes.
What do you Josh, what do you think this movie's gonna be about?
I'm to guess that this is like Hatchet, like the book series that didn't exist back in the 50s.
Sorry. Could you explain what?
Hatchet is like a young adult like fiction series about a kid who like falls out of a plane or survives a plane or has to survive in like the Canadian wilderness for like an extended period of time, and then there's like 8 more books about the same kid.
I was more interested in what you said next, like a book that doesn't exist. What do you mean by that?
Well, Hatchet didn't exist in the 50s. I'm pretty sure it was well after.
Okay. It's like a period piece book that was written later?
It's a similar type of situation, I'm saying.
Like, okay, sorry. I thought we were getting into some weird Mandela effect stuff. Like, I swear, I read this book series when I was a kid, but I looked it up and it just doesn't exist. And it's like, well, in that case, Josh, maybe you should pull a shitty movie and pretend you're the Beatles who wrote it.
Right. We haven't seen Yesterday yet.
Yeah, yesterday.
Let's go on the list eventually.
Why? Because
you haven't seen it. Because I have a music-themed list of Yesterday Across the Universe and Blinded by the Light, which is coming up at some point.
Has not seen Across the Universe?
I have.
What, were you busy for that month when it came out? Like that?
No, I've seen Across the Universe.
Oh, wait. I thought Josh...
Oh, no, have you seen Across the Universe, Austin?
I have.
Oh, darn. Oh, yeah. Find a third music movie.
That was my girlfriend at the time's like favorite movie. I watched that movie so many times.
Oh, yeah. I was like, yeah, where were you the month it came out? Because everybody was like, you have to go see this in the theater.
I don't think I saw it in the theaters, but I did see it a bunch of times.
I had two girl roommates at the time, so I saw it in theaters at least twice. But, yeah, we're talking about movies, whatever. We can keep talking about movies. Fuck it. We've been doing this podcast long enough. People know we talk about movies and video games.
But yeah, I think this is going to be like people get lost in the wilderness and like Northwest is like the direction they were headed or the direction that the like people are looking for them
on. The northwest side of the tree.
I know. That's all I have to go by. I think it's going to sort of wilderness survival movie.
Nice.
Where in the process they learn more about themselves than each other.
All right. So a real... It's not going to be a closed room, but it might function as one in the forest, like a group of people.
Yeah, like it's a closed forest movie.
A closed forest movie. I like that.
Right.
Like the Blair Witch Project could be considered a closed forest movie.
It's a closed forest movie, yeah.
Have you seen that, Josh?
No, I've not.
Oh, that was so...
Isn't that like the precursor of found footage?
It was the first big one to get into theaters. There are ones before it that are a little better, in my opinion.
Like sure, but it was like the one that brought is the one that brought it into the.
I want to tell my Blair Witch story because I have a really fucking good one, but I'll wait for the episode because we're definitely doing that. That'll be in like edgy late 90s thrillers.
Can we watch all the Paranormal Activity movies also?
Oh my god, Josh!
Nine of them.
Yes, I've seen them all. I put on the most recent one, like as a jest, and I Kat was there. I was like, don't look when it shows what this is. I just want to start watching and see how long it takes you to figure out what movie series this is. We watched to the end. It was good. It was sort of, the new one is really good.
Wow. You think like at least like Final Destination, you get like cool kills every. Like, how does that series innovate?
That's what I was thinking, and it proved me wrong.
Okay.
Final Destination also, last one was really fun. Because it kind of ties it into the first one.
I've always liked the Final Destination movies.
I've always liked those. They've been really good, like, fun theater watches with friends. Because the theater, you go on a Friday night and everybody's just having a good time and, like, laughing out loud and yelling. And that's how you want to experience
it. It's like whenever we went and saw Jack, the new Jackass.
Yeah, and it's more of an like a whole theater experience.
Yeah.
That was really
that was like first time that was like the theaters. First time back in the theater. I think it was a lot of people's first time back into the theaters, which was a good movie
it
for
really
that.
It
I
felt
think.
Happy. It felt like it drew people together in like a joyous event. Yeah,
watching these idiots destroy their bodies.
But it's so fun, and it's such a healthy community. Those dudes,
it is.
I really had no problem with it. Like it was a grand time.
It's all good. I've loved Jackass. For a long time.
Justin, if you had never seen this movie before, what do you think about it? No, I'm just fucking with you. We don't do that here. I think it's about a compass maker.
You asking me to give notes on Hitchcock? Were you trying to, like, trick me or something?
Yeah. No, because we haven't watched it yet. I'll ask you that when we come back.
Yeah.
Okay, how would you make this movie better, Justin? Yeah, well, and then we just listen to Jostein go off for like a half hour, and that's the podcast.
Sure. Yeah, because that's...
That's how you wrote your thesis on, right? How I'm better than Hitchcock?
Yeah.
You stood in front of the class and you're like, not graduate. I requested velvet curtains and a soundtrack of dum ba da 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 dum ba dum be played as I start reading my thesis. And that didn't happen. And that's why I failed.
Well, I lost all the weight because I finally like conceded that he's just a better director.
Yeah. Oh, I see. You were going for Hitchcock?
I was trying to look like Hitchcock.
To fill out the silhouette?
Yeah. You got to be able to fill out the silhouette.
Right.
The best thing since Hitchcock is Justin's like autobiography.
I'm better than Hitchcock. I swear I'm not a psycho.
Yeah. Guy who's never made a movie.
That would be a really fun satirical read, though. I've never made a movie, but I sure as hell think I could do it better than this Francis Ford Coppola guy. All right, so we're going to get to it. We're going to get a little classy. We're going to go back to the 50s. Going to take a couple of different modes of transportation along the way. Pack your bags, Josh. Get comfortable. Light up any sort of tobacco you want, because woo, smoky movie coming up.
This is a lot, very smoky movies. Alfred Hitchcock loved smoking. I mean, everybody loved smoking, having it in the movies because it just looks good, I guess.
Well, yeah, you can read about how, or listen to videos about how, like, the tobacco industry definitely had ties to the film industry because they're like, you can convey any fucking thing you want with a cigarette. You can't show sex, but if you show two people lighting up in a bedroom, you know they just had sex. You can be mysterious. You can be romantic and light someone's cigarette for them. I bet you every one of those is in this movie. I've seen it before, but I didn't take cigarette notes.
I bet you. Yeah.
All right. We'll be
watch his movies just through the lens of looking for how they treat smoking.
Yeah. I mean, that was the case up until the early and some places late 90s, right?
Yeah.
It's not just
even in not the US, it's still really like people think that smoking's like declined, but in everywhere besides America, it's been going up.
Pretty, pretty smoky. All right, we'll be back. Have you seen North by Northwest? And we're back, having just watched North by Northwest from 1956 by Alfred Hitchcock.
59.
Ah, damn it. I'm not retaking it. Oh.
Keeping it in.
Keeping it in. Josh, what'd you think?
Pretty good.
Yeah, right?
I'm still a little on the fence about whether or not I'd recommend it, but we're not to that point yet, so I don't have to decide.
Not at all.
I love so movies with witty banter.
You've watched three Hitchcock movies now.
The third, yeah.
Probably the director you've watched. Well, no, that's not true.
Surely it can't be the most.
I'd say Carpenter is the most.
Whoever directs the Fast and the Furious movies is the director. Yeah, right.
We haven't done those
stuff
for the podcast, though. I don't know if that counts. I'm going to say for the podcast, it's either Carpenter or if all those, like, damn monkey movies had the same director, it's them.
I doubt it.
You're right. Those probably had three apiece, and each one had three different directors. I just don't know what the monkey's motivation is anymore. So this movie, no planets, no apes. No, I mean, there's just the planet we're on, obviously. But did anybody else's have this cool green MGM logo pop up right in the beginning? Mm-hmm. Took a picture of it. It was took me by surprise because the lion was black and white. The border was green. Didn't start with a traditional Alfred Hitchcock. I don't know if any of the ones we've watched have had that in the beginning. That might be like Alfred Hitchcock like, Presents.
That's from his TV show.
That's from his TV show. Okay, okay. Josh, there used to be a silhouette drawn line of Hitchcock. It was in one of the posters we'd shared in the chat. And it would be like projected onto a curtain, and he would come out and stand in the silhouette, and then like the lights would come on and he would present the thing. Very iconic.
Okay.
Not in the movies, but if you want to watch the TV shows, recommend it. It's where he started, right?
No, that was much later.
Oh, so it's something, it's like a deal he got later.
Yeah, he did that from 55 through 61, Alfred Hitchcock Presents.
Gotcha. Okay.
And it wasn't his stuff. It was kind of like him. It'd be like if Quentin Tarantino had a show where he just showed you movies that he liked.
So kind of the Twilight Zone, but kinda. Movies. Okay. The green of this turns into green lines, which turn into a building. Really, really artistic, really stunning opening to this. It takes a while to get going. We know we're off to a slow burn because it's a two and a half hour movie.
It is.
Was it that long? It didn't feel that long.
It is a 2.5 hour long movie.
The start was definitely a little slow.
Immediately, we get some of this banter that you like, Josh. This walking and talking. Carrie.
Lots of walking and talking. This is a very secretary.
And before the day of like voice memos and smartphones, you just had a person with a pad of paper that tried to keep up with you and write as fast as they could.
Yep. Her name was Siri, too.
This, you know what this shows me?
What?
This scene shows me that we work way too fucking hard these days. Way too little. Mm-hmm. They have people at this time, and we have robots we keep in our pockets that do this exact same organization, and we're still grinding to the fucking bone. Like, come on. That's a sign that we need to slow down. We're working way too hard.
You don't have to convince me.
We got audience members, though, Justin. Or not audience. We got listeners. That's what they're called, right? This is filmed in front of a live studio audience. I'll put in like a laugh track.
Some laugh tracks, yeah.
You know why I was thinking that?
We just got to get a laugh track of Nick laughing.
It's that fucking D&D game we had last Friday where Nick, former friend or former guest of the show, friend of the show.
Former friend.
Former friend of the show. We hate him now, but we'll talk about him in a good light. No, he's amazing. Former guest of the show, or host of What About Wrestling.
Yeah.
And he recommended that while we were playing D&D, we put on like hours-long just blackout silence. And then intermittent laugh tracks would pop up, and it was really scary. Everybody in the party did it at different times. And we'd be talking and giving serious dialogue, and we'd be like, hold on. Whew, I just got real scared by the laugh track.
Or hold on, I can't hear because the laugh track is going, and it's
so
really
no
loud.
Live studio audience today. Maybe someday.
I was going to say, if we do a live studio audience thing and pipe in a laugh track, we just need to get like recordings of Nick laughing since he's the one who listens.
And then multiply it so it sounds like there's like 55 Nicks or something. The taxi thing kind of shows that he's a dick. He works in advertising and marketing, and he's like, oh, I have a very sick woman with me. Please let me take this cab. And it works, gets her home, and he's taken off before lunch. That's what I realize. It's like he's just leaving the office, him and his secretary, going home, rest of the day off, because he goes to this lunch that's like just martinis and a bowl of pretzels. Or some sort of drink. Anybody else see this?
Right. Yeah. This was...
I wrote down lunch, LOL.
Mm-hmm. This made me think of Mad Men.
Me too. I haven't watched a ton of it, but I know it's about marketing. I know it's about drinking and family neglect.
Yep. Lots of drinking cocktails, fancy cocktails at lunch.
Yep. The cocktails in this, we'll get to it later. They don't say what they are at lunch, but they're drinking some strange drinks in this. Some drinks that really haven't survived all that well. But yeah, we'll get to it. Goons, hired goons, show up at the restaurant, and this goes to a 10 right away because they pull a gun on him. They're like, "We have it pointed at your heart."
Yeah, he's a very calm person for all the shit that he went through.
Eventually, it seems kind of strange. Like, it got to a point where I was watching it and I was like, "All right, are you a spy? Or is there something wrong with you? Are you a serial killer? are you a psycho? Like, are you a Bates?" He's been going through these extraordinary things and barely bats an eye. Maybe, you know what? I figured it out, Justin. Maybe
he's just drunk.
Maybe it's all the goddamn alcohol.
Yeah.
Maybe he's just kind of like, "Oh, this is a little different than my usual day-to-day life because I've had a pint of bourbon, and that's not normal."
And because he just popped pills that were cocaine because that was something that you did. Right?
Sure. They were probably called something different. The mysterious Quaaludes that we always hear about.
Sure.
That I am super jealous that I'll never get to try because no one makes them anymore.
Right.
They just sound fantastic. I don't know, all the weird drugs you read about in books from this time and autobiographies from musicians and stuff where they're just like, "Oh yeah, this was some new concoction whipped up in a lab, but the recipe got lost when this guy died, so good luck ever finding it again," or something. It's a really strange time, and all these dudes, these CIA dudes, were on LSD at this time in the 50s. Not to get all conspiracy theory, we can, if the viewers want, write us at fabcheck@gmail.com if you want to hear more outlandish conspiracies tied into stuff. But this isn't conspiracy.
Yeah, awesome. You launch a side podcast that's talking about conspiracy.
That's what I'm saying. If we get the request for it, I will. But this is what I'm getting at. The MKUltra shit released. They were all on LSD, the CIA dudes, the feds, the people behind the picture in this, which makes a lot of sense because this movie is kind of like a James Bond film, or even, dare I say, an Austin Powers film. If Mike Myers didn't know he was Austin Powers. This is like if Austin Powers and Total Recall were combined.
Right. Sure. I was going to say, this very often gets called the first James Bond film.
It is. It really is. And did you know if it was Ian Fleming, right, that wrote the James Bond novels?
I think so.
I wonder if his books were out at this point and influenced Hitchcock in any way.
It might have, because, I mean, this has all the same beats of it as a
A James classic Bond. Spy novel of any type. Yeah. Mission Impossible, James Bond, The Man Who Knew Too Much, really similar vein.
Mm-hmm.
But so, not to get too far ahead, they think he's someone he's not. They take him to a house
George
in the hills.
George Kaplan.
And they're just not listening to him. It's like when we try to tell Josh we should do Miami Connection again on the show, he's like, "I swear, I've never heard of it. You can't make me watch it. I have no idea." I could see Jimmy Stewart in this part pretty easily, too.
You keep doing a James Stewart. He's not in this movie.
I know. I'm just thinking of Rope. And you gotta admit, it's the continental accent. Cary Grant has a little bit of that.
Sure, but you did that. I immediately thought James Stewart.
Okay, let's hear your Cary Grant. Mr. I'm better than Hitchcock.
I can't do it either, but... And Hitchcock didn't use Cary Grant a whole lot. James Stewart was his male star.
That's why I'm getting him confused. Yeah, he was also in Rope.
There's actually a factoid about that. Do you want to hear?
Let's go for it.
So he just got done filming Vertigo with James Stewart, and apparently he had like talked about some of the plot of the project to James Stewart, who starred in Vertigo, and Stewart apparently thought that he naturally was assumed that he was being cast as Roger Thornhill and was really, really eager to play it. Hitchcock always wanted Cary Grant to play the role. He didn't want to hurt Jimmy Stewart's feelings, so he delayed the production of the film until Jimmy Stewart was already taken up filming a movie called Anatomy of a Murder.
Oh, see, now I just wonder what would have happened if I'd never been born and Hitchcock had made all these films with him from the beginning. And then, you know, an angel shows him what would happen. Awesome. Cary Grant does really well in this. He plays this buffoon, kind of.
Yeah, a little bit. Did he has some really funny lines that make me laugh every time I hear them.
Have you ever seen The Man Who Knew Too Little? It's a play on The Man Who Did Too Much. It's like a early 2000s film with Bill Murray.
No, I haven't.
It's a pretty fun comedy that's in the vein of these, a more modern one. I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember it being fun. So they're just convinced he's this other dude, this spy. And he's like, I swear, it's not me. It's not Jimmy Stewart. It's Cary Grant. Look at my license. It says Cary Grant. I know you think
I
sound
Jimmy
like...
Stewart.
I love Jimmy Stewart.
I don't know who Jimmy Stewart is.
Nah, see? We know you're Jimmy Stewart. You sound just like him. And you're in a Hitchcock film, see? So our plan is, what we're going to do is we're going to give you this entire glass of bourbon.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Send you on your
that
way.
To
get you arrested for DUI. That'll
you
be...
know, you didn't have to force me in my car. I would have just drove.
Joke's on you. This is the 50s, and I've been practicing.
Right?
Oh, bourbon driving was an Olympic event back then. Yeah, this is...
They weren't trying to get him arrested.
I know.
They were trying
to
kill him.
That's the joke. Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure, in case Josh thought that they were trying to get him arrested.
No, it was very clear. We're trying to kill him, and he moved out of it.
But if Justin had directed this movie, there would have been a pop-up bubble that said that. Hey, guys, they're trying to kill him. Just because he survives isn't their plan.
Yeah.
I think this driving scene's pretty hilarious. He's doing surprisingly well. You're right, Justin. He's had a little bit of practice, I think.
Yeah, he's done this before.
I know this road like the back of my hand. Wow. He almost goes off the cliffside a couple of times. He almost sends people off the cliffside. No joke, drunk driving, terrible thing. Don't do it. We don't encourage it here. Because it's dangerous, and it hurts a lot of people. But... he's lucky, fortunate. He does not get injured. Some cops see him and start pulling him over. And I love this scene is where I start to get convinced that this is Alfred Hitchcock's comedy movie.
Oh.
Like, through and through. I know people get shot and murdered in it, but I don't think he made one that gets more funny than this, including prop humor, which seems way ahead of its time in movies. That was probably a thing way back in time in, like, vaudeville stage acts, but didn't see it in movies from this time. At least we haven't. We haven't done a lot of movies from this time, though. All right.
That is true.
This scene with the police is hilarious. He's trying to convince them that, yes, he is drunk, but it's not his fault. They fed him a bottle of bourbon, which is true.
Yeah, they did.
They're like, we caught this guy driving erratically. Blah, blah, blah. He keeps trying to walk away. He calls his mom, which is pretty funny.
This is one of the hilarious lines, because he tells his mom, he's like, Mom, they made me drink a bunch of bourbon. And they're like, no, they didn't give me a chaser.
And knowing how his mom behaves and treats him after this scene, I can't believe it. I just can't. Like, he must be under her, like, heel.
Wardship, like, or something?
He must be at her beck and call. They had theater
tickets.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
He's like, what is he? Like,
he's a mama's boy. He's a mama's boy.
I know
boy.
He drinks and smokes through the entire thing. He's got like leather tan body. How old is he in this movie? Because were I to guess, I would say like 56. Josh, can we get a guess from you?
Well, the girl, it says she's 26 in this movie.
I don't think so, man. I watched it.
How old is the main character in in Cat?
No, the actor. I want to get a guess before we look.
I'm gonna say late 40s. I'm gonna go 40. I'll say 49.
Justin, how old?
I just assume people looked older back then.
Cary Grant would have been 55.
Ah, so it was a year off. Nice. Yeah.
He was.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And
Eva Marie Saint.
Eva Marie Saint playing Eve says she's 26.
Oh, so she's playing her age.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's just like he's 50 and she's 26.
He's 55 and she's 25.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's almost twice her age. Yep. No one talks about that when we talk about the movie. She's also in a terribly abusive. She's basically being human trafficked.
She was 35 whenever the film was made.
That makes sense. Okay. That makes a lot more sense. But yeah, she's basically...
But still, like 20... Plus, she might have been lying as a character too, because she's... to spoil the movie, but...
Well, everyone from this point out is suspicious, I would say, right?
Yeah.
He gets bailed out by his mom and his lawyer. They show up in the morning, this court hearing. He's just hiding his face in shame and trying to convince the judge what happened. The judge is like, well, we'll start an investigation into it, which is kind of nice. At least they're doing that, and they're not straight up like, nah, you're a drunk. Go home.
Right.
His mother is absolutely no help.
Probably only because he's like a rich advertising dude.
When his lawyer vouched for any credence to him, was like a pretty well-to-do lawyer.
Yeah.
You know, they like straight out ask him, you know, do you think your client is the kind of guy that would lie about this kind of nonsense?
But also, Josh, imagine what kind of people have a lawyer like that to vouch for them.
Well, yes.
Yeah,
also,
he and a free attorney given by the city.
Sure.
His mom, I love her remark in the courtroom where the lawyer's like, well, why no? He's never acted in any appropriate way in his life. And his mom's just like, guffaw, like in the fucking courtroom. Like, wow, thanks, mom.
Yeah. By the way, he looks older than his mom.
Yes. They are an appropriate couple. Age-wise, these two actors.
Yeah. They showed his mom. I'm like, what?
Says it. Yeah, he talks about having two ex-wives too. But God, the cars in this movie—they're beautiful.
Yeah.
They're just all sweeping lines and great paint jobs, and oh, even the taxis are pretty.
I like the suits too.
Oh yeah, the suits aren't that good. Suits would improve over time.
Sure.
And obviously, mechanics would improve over time, but design would decline. Yeah, it's pretty classy. The black and gold mic that this secretary's using when they come into the building, I'm like, damn, I want one of those to podcast on. That's so fucking beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking for somebody at this restaurant. The United Nations. Everybody's seated and having like drinks. It looks like a restaurant. But
so there's another bit about this scene.
Yes.
He couldn't get permission to film inside the UN, but he got the lobby by sneaking in a camera on a tour and using that footage. And then he recreated what he saw on the tour in a soundstage.
Ooh, that's pretty high-level guerrilla filmmaking. I like that.
Yeah.
That's some Kubrickian shit right there.
Hitchcock did not fuck around.
No. He once make like a wax dummy of himself and dump it in the river just to create a scare that he had been murdered?
Yeah, he did.
God damn. That's a good time. He did some shitty things, of course, too.
He did.
He was not a perfect person by any means.
Pretty abusive to a lot of his performers.
Yes. It would come out later that the mostly the actresses who worked with him did not enjoy their time working with him. But you can read about that in different autobiographies and stuff. And if you want us to get deeper into the history, I don't know, maybe we'll start a Patreon so we have some time to do some deep dives, some digging. Yeah. We could call it, like, Have You Listened? And you could listen to us talk some more.
Yeah. Have you heard?
That sounds like more of a music review one.
Yeah, sure.
I love getting into all the Have You potential that's out there.
Have You Verse?
The Have You Verse. Yeah. And then they all come together and fight Havos, who's gathered all the Infinity Podcast Gauntlet microphones. I don't know.
The Infinity Twitter follows?
I didn't watch any of those. And I don't have Twitter. But a knife gets thrown in this dude's back. The ambassador that it was supposed to be his house that they were at when the police came to investigate. It was his house, but there was like somebody playing him. His wife has been dead forever.
Someone was playing the wife.
Yeah, like a whole setup is starting to emerge. And
This is disconnect point number one for me. Like, I'm no knife, but I don't know how throwing that tiny little, like, butter knife into someone's back, like, would kill them instantly.
You
also, why the fuck he grabbed the knife?
Oh my god. Like, yeah.
What? He didn't just, like, accidentally touch it when he was falling. He, like, latched on it and was like, oh, and, like, to it for the entire scene. Like, what the fuck are you doing, guy?
He's tasting the blade and wiping it all over his face.
Basically, yeah.
And he's putting it back in the wound, and he's like, I'll just leave this here for the police to find. Oh, no.
Yeah, right.
Stab.
That's the only thing that could have made it more like, if this was a full-on comedy, he would have put the knife back in the body, like realizing.
Yeah,
like,
would have pulled it out.
That would have been so hilarious. Yeah, I don't have a problem with throwing knives. That's a thing I've seen people do. It could have been a bigger knife. You're right. This was very much a stage prop knife. That I don't know. Hitchcock probably wasn't a very good knife thrower himself. He didn't.
Like,
know
just
what
the grabbing part. Like, I'll give them. Maybe he killed them by throwing knife, but.
The fact that he, like, grabbed it was just, God. Like, wow, here goes your life. Like,
he's
like, he already knows, like, something's going on, and, like it, I could maybe understand if this is, like, the first major situation been put in, but it's not.
Yeah.
I think the selling of it is that he was, like, it was a gut reaction of, like, trying to help the guy by pulling the knife out.
Yes.
But he didn't pull it out. He just, like, held on.
Oh, he pulled it out.
Did he pull it out?
He pulled it out. And that's why we're joking. It would have been funny if he tried to stick it back in.
He puts it back in.
No, this will stop the blood flow. Oh, I missed. I have to put it in the original hole. Here, again. Oh, I missed. There's so much blood on me now.
My name's not... my name's not Jimmy Stewart. I don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah, we know you, Jimmy Stewart, and we're here to kill Jimmy Stewart because he broke the space-time continuum thing by wishing on Christmas.
What a weird, like, standby.
You put
situation.
Down the moon, Jimmy Stewart. There's consequences.
Oh, God, you know, with the way things are going and how they mine for ideas in, like, old cinema, that we're just going to keep working our way further and further back, because how many times can you remake Halloween? And we're going to get eventually, like, the Rat Pack verse versus the, like, Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart Hitchcock verse.
Well, I mean, we're getting to the point now where they're just going to, like, put holograms of people in movies instead of actual actors.
Oh, yeah.
So just go back to that, like, whoever is the most popular, whoever tests the bet. If that's Cary Grant,
James
Dean
fight Marlon Brando when they're dressed the same from those movies.
Yeah.
Sign up to the metaverse now and you can witness it.
You're describing Ready Player One.
I hate. I know. It's just, I know. It's the amalgamation of, like, outdated nostalgia, toxic bullshit. So this painting shot when he flees the building is amazing. Did anybody else clock this? Like
The painting shot.
so he's running away after the guy gets stabbed, and
Yeah.
we're like 100 floors up watching him get into the taxi, and it's fully hand painted, the
Oh,
shot.
yeah, for sure.
But
It's great.
the mat of him on the sidewalk and one taxi is real. I watched this on HBO Max, so it was in high def.
I
Do
did
not
too.
regret it. It was beautiful.
Yeah. I love watching Hitchcock movies for like just like
The atmosphere.
truly an innovator with the shit that he came up with to pull the stuff off he wanted.
Yes.
Because nobody had done most of this stuff before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. These are groundbreaking things, Josh, like in cinema. I know sometimes we take them for granted because, like.
Far as like special effects and stuff, I mean.
Well, also, we'll get to it here in a second, but erotica. Wow, wow, wow. So, because he's getting questioned in the train station. He's trying to get a train out of here. And he's wearing some sunglasses. So the guy selling him the ticket's like, "Hey, buddy, something wrong with your eyes?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah, they're sensitive to questions."
That was a good one.
Oh, that
I'm
was really
surprised
good.
that's not a line.
I know. Like, I'm surprised they didn't use that in They Live or something. Another previous episode heavily featuring sunglasses. He
You
meets.
know why? Because it's normal to wear sunglasses anywhere now.
Yeah, you just wouldn't question it. He meets Eve, the femme fatale blonde that helps him get on the train. It turns out that she knows everything about him, and to her, she's just an exciting woman who likes murderers. She's that, like, she's the person who writes, like, to people on death row
I
or serial killers.
cannot, like, Josh, you were talking about how you couldn't believe he grabbed the knife. I could not believe he couldn't smell the honey coming off this honey pot.
Oh, he smelled
Like,
it, and
Jesus
yeah,
Christ.
it's
Smelling
a little
good.
obvious, right, from
It's
looking
real
from the outside
obvious.
in. Now, you don't become a spy in a day.
I know, but I'm just saying, him, he truly believes, like, this girl's just so enraptured with him.
And, like,
Like,
wants to help, yeah.
just
Cool, yeah.
completely
He's that full of
100%
himself. Like, we've established that.
believes
He is.
he is full of himself. He 100% just believes that this gorgeous woman he ran, like, talked for 2 seconds
And helped him escape the cops.
is gonna help, is gonna, like, fall in
Immediately,
love with
I
him
got assassin
completely and do
vibes. I was just
everything.
like, her lipstick is a knife and she's gonna slit his
Yeah.
throat. Like,
Yeah.
her shoe is just a shoe and she's gonna stab it in his eye. I don't care. Like,
Right.
This is where the witty banter stops being good. I never
She
thought I'd say
stilettos him.
that.
Oh, how so,
But,
Josh?
like, I don't like witty banter when it's used for romance, apparently.
Oh, okay. So this is what I'm talking about. This took the
'Cause he like
place.
turns he like turns like a 5 minute seduction or a scene into like a 20 minute. You see here, honey,
I
there
don't
was
know what you
a
mean. What do
like
you mean by that?
come on.
How do you say? Where do you want to put
This is a
there? How
very
hard do you want me to put
snappy
there?
sex this is a very snappy sex scene.
This is a sex scene. This is a 1950s sex scene
It's
through
a
and
verbal
through.
sex scene.
No, it's
Yeah.
yes, but it's just a
Yeah.
sex scene because they could not get past code and regulations to put
Of
actual
course.
like sex scenes. There,
Right.
this fucking dialogue in this movie gets hot at some
Hey,
points.
right?
Everyone's wearing gray, but I like it better than the coming decades where everyone's wearing
It's not
brown and
brown.
tan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
Not
was thinking that
brown.
while watching it. Everyone in this dining car, while they're having this sexy conversation, wearing like charcoal gray or black or like light gray, and I'm like, that's better. That's so much better than what we went to later. I had to look up what a Gibson cocktail is, and it's one of those obscure cocktails that you're like, why does this even have a name? Why don't you just order the drink differently? It's just a gin and vermouth, but instead of lemon zest or olive, you put a cocktail onion in it. That's the only difference. So just say
Okay.
I want a gin martini with a cocktail onion.
What's a cocktail onion?
Those are those baby onions that you see at the liquor stores and or grocery stores sometimes, and they're tiny. They're like really tiny onions in pickle brine.
Huh.
They're tasty. I get it. I'd hate when drinks are that similar but have a completely different name. Like, oh, he's ordering a Gibson. That's so fancy. Like, that dude on the train would have been like, well, no, I guess it was 56 and everyone was drinking, but nowadays he'd be like, what the fuck is a Gibson?
Have to pull out his little book.
Yeah, his little black book of drinks. His little Sam Malone dates in the first half, drink mixes in the second half. I love this callback to him thinking he's fat on the train. Like, we got one earlier. He was talking to his secretary, and he's like, oh, I remember to put a memo on my desk to not eat so much, you fucking pig, on Monday. So I see it first thing. And she's like, all right, sir, that's a little harsh. And then he's on the train, and she's like, I would recommend that you don't, or she's like, she's not Cary Grant. She's like, I'd recommend you don't have dessert. And he's like, oh, I get the picture, toots. She's like, no.
He's very sensitive about his weight.
I know, it's kind of sad. She's like, no, I didn't
mean it
that way.
He's not fat at all.
Not at all, no. He has the ideal 1950s man body.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe they got his shirt off later in this. They kind of pull a Three Amigos to get him off of the train, by which I mean he takes a costume that looks like everybody else's outfit, the train workers, and it's like the blue overalls and the red hat.
I like the twist on this where they make it, the guy makes it look like he was mugged, and then he would walk off and you see him counting the money. Because he pointed them in the wrong direction.
That's why I say this is his most comedic movie, I think.
Yeah. I just like touches like that, too, because it's like, not only is it funny, but it like conveys a lot about the characters without, like, it's like the classic show don't tell. He's actually showing you.
They're not brutes. They're not just like assaulting old men on the train. They're bettering them. They're like making deals with them, giving them a shitload of money, it looks like.
I kind of think that was Eve's idea, but...
you think he was waiting behind a door and just be like, take your clothes off, dame, and he'll come in here all googly-eyed, and I'll bop him with this lead pipe, and then we'll take... Yeah, and Eve's like, I have thousands of dollars.
I have money.
A lot of money. It's the 50s. I have so much money. And he's like, I wanted to bop somebody, see? Never been on one of these capers before.
Did you hear there's a line later on where he talks about why he got divorced, and he says they told him he lived a too boring of a life.
Right.
As they're dangling from a mountaintop.
Another comedic touch is this really tiny spy razor that she has. This is so Austin Powers, right?
Yeah, it is. Him saving, and she comments like, why did that take so long? He's like, why did you give me such a small fucking razor?
And even the dude next to him in the train station has like a full razor, straight razor, he's shaving with. That was hilarious. Also, all the train stations in this are really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them still exist, some of them don't, sadly.
Yeah.
My notes here say, damn, she didn't kill him on the train. So she's like, hey, you have a meeting.
He just kept him from getting caught by the police. That was her job.
Well, at this point, I'm still thinking assassin.
Sure.
She gets a call. She's like, hey, you have to go to this meeting spot. The head goon is going to be waiting for you there. And he's like, oh, all right, that sounds like a plan. I'll definitely go out in the middle of nowhere with no water bottle or anything. And he does. He goes out into the middle of a fucking field in, like, fall, maybe? Because everything's dead?
Mm-hmm.
Probably my favorite scene in the movie.
Oh, so good.
Not the scene that's coming up. This part right here where he gets a bus in the middle. No. Or in stand. Or for, like, 10 solid minutes.
Yes.
Where nothing happens. Bravo, Hitchcock. For like, just waiting this long to show that's is amazing.
Cars also, keep it driving sets by, and like the wind is blowing, and
that dude comes to get on the bus.
Yeah. And isn't related to the movie. Oh, he's just there to get on the bus.
Yeah.
So good.
And then the scene happens.
What an elaborate way to execute someone.
And then, the reason that the plane attacked, because they heard that guy point out that he's crop testing in a place where there's no crops, so
yeah,
Cary Grant figured it out. If he hadn't said that, then we don't know when they would have attacked.
So this plane either has guns and a crop dusting tank attached to it, or there's two dudes in it. One of them's running flying and crop dusting for some reason, and one of them's running the gun. Like, why make it look like you're crop dusting? Why not just go shoot the fuck out of this dude and get away?
Yeah, they had so many times to just shoot this dude. For example, when they were liquoring him up and putting him in the car.
Oh my god.
They can't be connected to it, right? If they shoot, could like trace the bullet. I don't know.
50s? I don't know.
Make it look like an accident.
No. They're shooting at him now. In the fucking...
Yeah, well, now he's made them mad, right? He's getting way too much.
Because he's a doofus who, like, keeps escaping their foils and, like, plot devices.
It's like Get Smart, right?
It is, yeah.
I haven't seen Get
They're
Smart.
They're both being played, because like they Smart. Think that he's, like, a...
Super spy.
They think he's a super spy.
Right, for some reason.
And, well, because the government...
Oh, like set him up, right?
Set him up.
And it made it look like you're working for his
because it does protect their actual super spy from any trouble.
Eve.
Right.
Eve is the super spy, which I think is cool.
It's really cool. Yeah. Holy shit. The plane dive bombs this tanker truck and just goes to 11. The movie cranks it up right here. Just ba-boom. Fireballs, and I'm like, whoa, I did not expect that from a Hitchcock movie the first time I saw this. It really took me to surprise.
Yeah.
A big explosion and like a suicide like flying into a tanker for because he thought it would like ignite the entire thing, maybe?
Maybe he just couldn't pull it up in time once I don't know. He and did just pull like they just flew into that
100% just bang right into the side of it. So scary, but then like the locals show up and they're like, "Oh, was that thing on fire?" and start running towards it. And he's like, "Get the fuck back! There's still one tanker that hasn't exploded, people. This is so dangerous."
And then
he goes to her hotel room after this.
He steals that dude's car.
Aw, his really cute old truck with like his refrigerator in the back of it.
Yeah,
that had all my soda pop in it. Aw. I go to the store once a year and fill up my fridge.
And this happens.
Wouldn't you know it? He gets to Eve's apartment. She's like, "Hey, you fucking can't be here. Like, seriously." He's like, "Well, how about a drink, sweetie?" And she pours him the biggest glass of scotch and water I've ever seen. Which, by the way, you... just have no judgment. If that's your drink of choice, go for it. But
it's like seltzer water, right?
Nope. This was just flat, warm, God. Room temperature from a pitcher, spring water.
God.
Yeah. Just come on. Yeah. Seltzer. I would
just drink the fucking booze
or put it on ice. Just drink the booze. She still pours like five fucking shots at a time.
Yeah,
she makes
not as
too.
Big as not another thing in the movie, like how much they drink. I'm like, oh, yeah, he was fine at the beginning of this.
Yeah,
like that's he was going to drink that much on his own, guys. You didn't have to force it on him.
This is where it gets a little more Total Recall-esque as he follows her to the auction house and finds out she's the mob boss's girlfriend.
Oh, he does the thing where he like
scratches the
rubs
paper.
The pen the scratches the paper.
Yeah. He's becoming a spy.
He did a spy thing. Yeah.
He did a spy thing.
It's like the Fast and Furious movies. They started as just like low level, we're going to steal DVD players, and now they're saving the world. They're slowly learning to become spies.
Except in one movie.
We never see that in the James Bond verse. He is just always the ultimate spy. There's never been.
I'm fine. I don't need an origin story for Bond.
You don't think like, that's coming though? Like a Kingsman.
It's gonna even. I don't need it.
Oh, neither do I. No.
Yeah, I'm fine with there being a cool spy person. I don't.
You can just be a spy person. I don't need to know.
Exactly. I'm fine.
Why?
With that. Yeah. Follows him to the auction house and sees he may be in really deep. Like, there are goons everywhere guarding the exits. And this, another hilarious scene where he's just making a mockery of the auction house. This poor auctioneer, he's taking it so seriously, he's just like, "Sir, how could you be so disrespectful?"
He tries to be nice about it, yeah.
Yeah, if you would just... join in with the spirit of everyone else, sir. We could all have a good time. He's like a Christian camp counselor or something.
His heart was broken with how Roger Thornhill was acting in this. He's just like, "What? But You, but it's an auction! You, why are you ruining an auction? It's so much fun!
Oh, yeah. You could just see the despair in this guy's face. Like, I don't understand. Why did he come to an auction? Is he okay? Does he need help? Everyone stop the auction. Is this man injured in some way?
He's seriously bidding $5.
13, sir. I think you mean 1300. You have to be mistaken, right?
Eventually the crowd like joined in on him ribbing this dude.
Aww.
Like whenever he made the $13 remark, laughed. Everybody laughed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he's getting good crowd work. But if people are also yelling, "Get out. We're trying to sell stuff." We're trying to buy spy artifacts with microfiche.
I need to buy some micro. I mean, the statue.
Yeah, the statue. It's totally just stolen indigenous artwork. Don't worry. It's nothing.
Yeah,
illegal.
There's nothing else insidious about it.
I'm just going to break it open to get what I want out of it. Then I'll throw it away.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay.
We had to use a priceless ancient artifact.
It's the last one from their tribe. Everything else was decimated by colonizers, but this one, we're honoring it by using it for CIA espionage.
Yeah.
Like I said, total LSD trips. Like, this cursed item will give us power, boys. Did this start the trope of villains living in like national monuments or just outrageous
places? It might
have
been. Yeah, I think so.
Because I couldn't believe it. They get to the fucking Mount Rushmore.
The house on top of Mount Rushmore.
And he's like, I live on top of that.
Yeah, just not even that far from Mount Rushmore. Right? Like, you know, a walk away.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Also, we have an airplane landing strip.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Right on top of
that. He's Philip Vandeman.
He's Van Damme, yeah.
Van Damme, not Van Damme. Philip Van Damme.
He's even richer than the main character, yeah.
He's Van Damme's dad, right? Jean-Claude?
Sure. No, it's James Mason.
James Mason is Jean-Claude Van Damme's dad? When did you go to Brussels? He meets up with them. He's like, give me the girl and I'll let you leave the country, see? And the other guy's like, yeah, see, he may think I think about the girl more than I do, see? And he's like, I see what you see, see? And she comes in and is just like, stop it, stop it, stop it. Blam, blam, blam.
Everybody stop seeing!
And just shoots Cary Grant a couple of times.
Oh, no, we're getting our scenes mixed up. She shot him before they went to Mount Rushmore.
No, they're over, like, they're in the
they're
diner
at the, like, gift
at
shop,
Rushmore.
And then on top of Mount Rushmore.
Oh, okay, yeah, they're not
the
in the house.
She shoots him in the gift shop first.
Yeah, she shoots him in the gift shop.
She shoots him in the gift shop.
The villain lives on top of there. That's why we were talking about that. The super villain. He's a super villain at this point.
He is.
You live on top of Mount Rushmore? Yeah.
He's another international spy.
He's like a Cold War spy. Yeah, yeah.
He should just live inside Mount Rushmore at this
he
point.
He should.
Like go
Washington's
full
eyes light up and it zooms in. Yeah. And that's his fucking hideout.
Yeah, I think they did that in Richie Rich.
I think you're right.
They didn't live in there, but it's where their
evil headquarters was.
It's where their base, their vault was.
Right. It's where the like climactic fight at the end of the movie happens.
Yeah,
that movie's good.
But
for,
it's
like,
not really Mount.
Third.
It's not really Mount Rushmore, though, is it? It's like their own Mount Rushmore.
It might be Mount Rushmore. Oh, I don't even know. I
think it's their own Mount Rushmore. Maybe the joke is they bought Mount Rushmore and they're putting their faces on top of the presidents.
Better use of it, I guess.
That's a pretty funny joke, if that's what it is.
You might have to go back and watch that scene at least just to find
out. Why do you remember that much about Richie Rich?
I don't know.
Have you
that
watched
movie
it
stuck
recently?
Out. No, it's I loved that movie as a kid.
Wow.
Watched it a lot. I watched a lot of the Macaulay Culkin movies a lot
as a kid.
I put
that on during lockdown, but I did not pay attention to it. It's good for like the first third while it's like showing off his exuberant wealth to all these poor inner city kids, and they're like, "Wow, the stuff you have could feed my entire neighborhood for the rest of our lives." And he's like, yeah, but also I have a McDonald's in my house, like a fully staffed McDonald's 24/7 just for me.
Yep.
That's how I know it's fresh. And I can tell them, because I own this franchise, technically, to make it my way. And they can't say, yeah. Sir, that's Burger King. We need you to leave. It's the only one in the world where you can do that. Because I'm that richy, rich.
He's like, I still have some of that Rick and Morty sauce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he knows that it's going to be a commodity in like 24 years or whatever. So he's in the hospital room and he can't leave. And the dude's like, oh, do you need anything? And he's like, oh, I would like some bourbon. Just a pint. You know, those big glasses that beer comes in? I want that much hard
just
liquor.
Just a pint of
for the
bourbon.
Night. And the guy's like, that sounds really good. I think I'll have some too. And he's like, I better pick up a quart then. Because one won't.
They're alcoholics.
I think you're right. He climbs out the window. He gets on top of Mount Rushmore again somehow. And gets to this bad guy's evil lair. And he's now in over his head, one goofball against some, like, supervillains.
At this point, does Cary Grant know what's going on? Like, has he met with the professor?
Yes. And at this point, sadly, the mob boss also knows what's going on with Eve, because his number one comes in and pretends to shoot him, showing that the blanks were in the gun that Eve shot Cary mm-hmm. Grant with.
He explains what she did, like, in detail. I forget what the term he used was, but it was like...
The Gestapo used to do such things. But yeah. Now they do it with blanks, and it's a little more kind. He's a real slimy dude, this number two. Kind of looks like mm-hmm. Adam Driver a little bit. I kept thinking...
A little, that. Yeah. A little.
He's a real... Like, every time you see him, he's just like... scary looking and about to commit some sort of heinous offense. Van Damme punching him is a really good shot. Like, the camera gets punched and then it shows him backing away into the chair. I love that. That
Martin Landau.
Oh, wow. That's a young Martin Landau?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. I didn't know that. That might be Adam Driver's real life dad. Who knows? And this right here, people, is why all stealth games have a coin mechanic in them these days. He's trying to get Eve's attention in the upper window. He's got a bunch of like coins he's using to toss, distract.
Oh, it's a callback because he showed her he has his own personally embroidered matchsticks.
That's a little later when he gets inside the house. I'm talking about beforehand when he's outside. Okay. And like, because Hitman, Thief... so many games, No One Lives Forever, all have a coin sure. you can use in your inventory to distract people before you, like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking it's because of this movie. I'm thinking that started sure. the coin obsession in sneaky things.
I mean, it's a great distraction if you were trying to sneak around, throw some money.
Money ghost in here? This movie has a great score, and we haven't talked about it yet.
It does.
It is all just movies full have great orchestral... scores. Really adds a lot of tension and drama to the scenes. But he gets in the house, and they're having a meeting downstairs. He knows Eve is doomed if she gets on this plane. It's almost here. They're all having a smoke and a drink in the smoke and drink room. And, yeah, tell them about this matchbook. What were you saying?
So earlier on in the movie, I believe, what is it, whatever they spent the night? Together on the train, she noticed that he has his own personal embroidered matchsticks that say ROT on them.
Rot.
Which stand for his name, I guess.
Sure.
And she asks him, what's the O stand for? And he says, nothing.
Yeah. But
joke back then.
I mean, it's a joke nowadays. It's pretty good.
That's pretty good. Bernard Herrmann is the guy who did the music, and he does a lot of Hitchcock movies, and he's fantastic.
So the callback is that he has one of these matchbooks on him, and he knows she'll recognize it, so he writes inside of it, they're on to you, don't get into the plane. He knows that Van Damme wants to, like, dispose of her over the water, which is pretty fucking heinous, like, drop her out of the plane. Who knows going how fast?
Yep.
So He drops it down. The number one goon picks it up and just puts it back on the table casually, which is awesome for her because she reads the message. Knowing she's in mortal danger, starts to go out with him to the tarmac, but she's really not getting away. There's not a lot of chance because he's stuck inside with the waitstaff. Obviously, evil waitstaff. They somehow know where the gun is. That was kind of strange. We find out that it's her gun, and so does he, after like 5 minutes, that it was full of blanks. Do you think she just straight up tried to shoot him?
Probably.
She's like, I'm tired of waiting. Blam, blam. I've got a Salisbury steak in the oven that needs taken out.
Right.
You're a trespasser. My boss is about to go on vacation. This would be too much paperwork to question him when you get back. But yeah, I guess supervillains in this world have supervillain waitstaff. She wasn't just some kindly old woman who was going to go off with her husband after this and vacation for the rest of her life. So he gets out to the tarmac in a car, thankfully. She grabs the object with the microfilm or microfiche and they book it, but don't make it any further than the Mount Rushmore facades, the faces. And this has been done in The Simpsons. This has been done in Family Guy.
Richie Rich,
as we mentioned before. You keep talking about it. You're going to have to put it on your list, but yeah. You don't have a list anymore. You just have
gobbity-goobity.
Yeah, it's just gobbity-goobity. It's a pit of despair, a black hole of Sandler. And this is, Josh, what do you think of this? This whole action scene.
You mean the slowest action scene in the world?
Yes.
The least tense action scene in the universe? Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous that they're playing this dramatic music as like, because like they get to Mount Rushmore first, right? And start climbing down, and then the bat show up and clear. We don't know where they are.
But also start climbing down.
Yeah, and they all climb down in different parts.
Yeah.
And the music picks up like they're being followed, and they're not really.
They could be discovered at any moment, and the bad guys have guns.
And, like, do we even establish that they have guns? I don't think we do.
All the bad guys have guns.
They just start climbing down. And then one guy happens to stumble upon them.
Yeah, yeah. And gets shot by a park ranger. Taken.
Yeah, no, that's
out.
Fine.
It's the park ranger's, like, I don't know, he's 5 days from retirement. Just like.
When was the Wilhelm scream, like, invented? Surely after this, right?
After this.
After this.
I
okay,
think
yeah.
In the 70s. I think, yeah. Because
that would have gone well with him falling off the Mount Rushmore.
I am so tired of it. Like
you can
use it as
overdone.
You can use it as a trope, but I don't want to hear it in serious movies anymore. Holy shit. It was before this. It could have been used. It's from 51.
Wow.
Hitchcock would not have used it though, I don't think.
Did sure. Hitchcock ever use Wilcox?
Yeah, give me that info, Justin. He couldn't have. They basically get saved. There's a moment that seems really tense. It's in one of the Japanese posters. It's amazing. Where they're like cliffhanging and he's like, come to me, Mrs. Grant. And it's this cool cut where he pulls her back into the train car.
Right.
It's a happy ending. The train goes through a tunnel, Josh. Do you know what that means?
I know what a tunnel is, yes.
But do you know what that symbolizes?
That they have sex.
Yeah, that's a trope in film. Train going through a tunnel is a way to say that.
Is this the movie that like invented
mm-hmm.
that?
Mm-hmm. It sure
yep.
is.
Really? Okay.
Yep.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Very
okay.
iconic. To get in the mood for this movie, I poured myself some bourbon.
Pour yourself a gallon of bourbon?
I measured out one or two shots. I did not free ball it with like a highball glass and just
actual shots or shots by like a North by Northwest standards.
My actual shot glass.
Okay, okay.
I wanted to be able to record the episode still. Because that would just kill me. If I wouldn't be here. But I also lit a cigar and just put it, puffed on it, and then set it down, so the whole house smelled nice and tobacco-y, just to set the ambiance. No. Yeah, like we said, real smoky, real drinky movie, full of twists and turns. But we've come to the part in the episode where, Justin, would you recommend it?
Yes. 1,000 times.
You've seen it before. Did you watch it for school before, or did you watch this one on your own?
I got into Hitchcock before I went to study film.
Yeah.
I've seen this before.
Nice.
This is one I watched with my grandparents a couple times.
Ooh, I bet that's a little awkward when it gets hot and heavy with the language.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to go get a snack.
I wasn't, like, super young, but, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
She wasn't showing me this whenever I was, like, 12, like...
Still.
12 or something.
It gets still awkward, yeah.
I think the first time I watched this, I was probably, like, 17.
I can't imagine sitting through it before. Like, when you were an actual kid or something, this would feel
yeah.
like...
This is not a movie for kids. Movie.
No, not at all. So yeah, you would recommend it. It's one of your top Hitchcock ones, right?
I don't know if it's one of my top Hitchcock ones, but it's good.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good Hitchcock. And this is good, but I don't know if it's my top. Rope is my favorite.
Right. I would definitely recommend it.
It's funny because that's one of his more obscure ones. Like most people. Like it wasn't.
But when
as
you
much
get into something,
success.
You look into the more obscure ones and you find the ones that suit your taste better.
Sure.
Just like albums and stuff. Yeah. I would highly recommend it. It's a blast to watch. Like I said, it might be his most comedic film. I thought parts of it were hilarious. I thought parts of it were tense. It did drag on in some parts, but that was to the movie's benefit. Like Josh said, when he had to wait in the fucking dusty road and nothing happened. It was like a scene out of Dumb and Dumber. It was so well done.
He's a master.
Yeah. There's trains. I love trains. There's planes. There's automobiles. I don't know if that's a standard I have to set or anything, but they were all there.
there were planes, trains, and automobiles, yes.
First time seeing this, what did you think?
Before I answer, can you tell me why the fuck this movie is called North by Northwest? Because
okay.
I don't think they title drop in this movie at all.
Because when he got on the plane with the professor, they were flying Northwest Airlines, I believe, and they were going north.
That's it? The fuck does that have to do with anything? Like, why? It's not the title.
Well, it's like the big epitus of the movie. They're like he's saving her from flying away.
Is that how they named movies back then? Well, like after like the titular scene?
I think it's more about how they named books, really. And that's what Hitchcock was following, is more of a thriller book sort of standard.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you look at Agatha Christie's books or stuff like that, it would be like... The Blue Rose, and it's like, what the fuck does that mean? But then, like, halfway through the book, it's like, and she had a pillow with the monogram Blue Rose, and you're like, oh!
Sure, it's like
okay.
The thing.
Sure.
Okay.
Just a way of naming things, I guess. I think it's kind of sexy. It doesn't give anything away, as we learned from the beginning.
It lets you put arrows on the title.
It does. Very catch-me-if-you-can kind of intro font. I guess Steven Spielberg was playing a lot off of Hitchcock.
Yeah, I think that catch-me-if-you-can is kind of North by Northwest is what you mean to say.
I said it the way I meant to say it.
Because I don't think Hitchcock was I don't think Hitchcock was
Spielberg.
It was aping Spielberg here.
Josh, give it to us.
This is a tough one. This is a pretty tough one.
Is it because there's lots of witty dialogue but also lots of romance?
Just let him go for it, Justin.
I think it's more because there's lots of witty dialogue but not quite enough witty dialogue.
Okay.
I think that I'm going to hesitantly not recommend this because it doesn't, like, follow through, right? Like, there's witty dialogue, but not the whole time. There's really good scenes, but not really good scenes all the time. You know, it's a little long, I think, for its own good. And I think some scenes, like, you know, where he holds the knife, or, like, all the scenes where she could have just killed whatever, like, kind of pull me out.
But
a little
she
bit.
Wasn't an assassin. Like,
yeah, she didn't want to kill him.
Well, right. But there was some other scene, like, later where, like, oh, he threw the matchbook down and, like, no one noticed that, even though there was, like, three people in the room. Like, I don't know. I don't think it was, like, nonstop. Like, the rope, like, how, like, rope is, like, the dialogue equivalent of Fast and the Furious, right? It's, like, nonstop witty dialogue, right?
I see where you're coming with that, yeah.
And it's in a closed room set. Like, you know, everything that happens matters. Not everything that happens. This movie was, like, on the edge of my seat, like, waiting for the next, like, laugh. Right, so I think no, I do not recommend this.
Wow.
But if you did watch it, I would not fault you for it, and I would recommend that you go onto YouTube and watch like the 10-minute like plane scene, because that needs no context.
It's really cool. Fun too, and it
that scene is really way. Really good.
Yeah,
very very good. Like I will probably be referring to that scene like many times. That's possibly. Best scene in a movie had on the podcast.
Wow. Ooh. And that doesn't get a recommend?
No, not for one scene. A scene doesn't get you a recommend.
Okay. A scene doesn't make a movie, Austin.
The best scene, I thought, could get a recommend.
He's recommending that scene.
Okay. Yeah, I'm recommending. We have a list of top scenes. Because like, I'm thinking back to like Princess Bride, like when Harry met Sally. So I'm like, I can't think of like I guess you have the poison switch scene,
him
or like
the
sword
the
fight.
Yeah.
No, not him falling. Every scene but that. But like I knew about those scenes, right? Like this scene, I didn't know about. Like I knew about the plane part. I knew being attacked by the plane. That's been parodied on a lot of stuff. But I didn't know about the part where he stands in a field for 10 minutes, like waiting for the plane to show. Like that's like chef's kiss.
Filming. The Simpsons have a great parody of this scene where it's Marge, and they're like, Marge, why are you afraid of planes? She thinks back, and her mom and her in a cornfield, and her mom's just like, look, Marge, this is what corn looks like. And all of a sudden, a plane swoops over and fires
bullets. It just comes up. Nope. Wow.
So, yeah, the fact that there's so much action following such like slow times, it makes for a wonderful scene.
Like, maybe if they kept up the is he a spy, isn't he a spy time, but they pretty quickly, like, get rid of that.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's pretty clear to the audience very quickly that he is not
a
spy.
Movie,
he's just some dude.
But a fun movie.
It is fun.
And very fun. Yeah, absolutely.
One of the funniest that Hitchcock made. If you... what?
This movie. Guys,
yeah.
I got some info. This movie...
Trivia?
This movie bombed.
Yeah.
Sure. I believe that.
Yeah.
It made $142,000 gross worldwide.
Oof.
With a $3 million budget.
Oof.
$66,000 gross US and Canada.
Wow. So nobody had a taste for Hitchcock after Vertigo.
Vertigo was very popular.
I think, was it too much though? Were they like, this is going to be too similar? That was such a stressful movie. And
it
they didn't know
been.
This was like a comedy?
Might have been. Or it was maybe they were just like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. I still had a great time watching this. I don't see why.
Because Vertigo cost less to make. It was
we'll get to that when we do the episode.
$250 million.
Oh, wow.
To make. Or not 250. $2,500,000.
2.5, sure.
Yeah, 2.5 million. And it made 7 million.
Yeah. Maybe it was just too soon. They're like, I just saw Vertigo. I can't go see this one. Because the poster even looked a lot like it. We were showing each other posters while we were watching it. And there's one that highly references Vertigo.
That was the original poster, by the way.
See? I bet people didn't go see it because they're like, I just saw Vertigo and this looks just like Vertigo. It isn't. It's nothing like Vertigo. So yeah, if you wanna listen to any of the other episodes or movies that we've talked about doing on the show before, you can find them on podcasts.com and the iTunes podcast app or Apple podcast app, wherever you find podcasts. You can find us on YouTube under FapCheck, Facebook under FapCheck, and like I mentioned before, you can write to us at FapCheck@gmail.com for any questions, concerns, recommendations, Patreon money, and ideas. Just send like a 3x5 card with a $5 bill stapled to it to FapCheck@theinternet.com and your idea for a Patreon on the back. Like, have you have you smelled? And we can smell different things and talk about them. Or have you felt? And we'll go to the carpet store and go through all the different samples of carpets and talk about them.
Have you tasted?
Ooh, what are we going to taste?
Whatever.
Oh, okay. Josh, you got any?
Doesn't have to be food.
Like, have you crowdfunded and we review other Patreons?
Ooh, yeah. Okay. That could be a Patreon-only exclusive, because you have to be in Patreon to know about the other Patreons.
Have you, we could do Have You Heard, which is the music one, and Have You Listened, which is the podcast one, where we review other podcasts.
Oh, I want to get on that right away. I have some things to say about other podcasts. All right. We'll see you next time. I'm Austin.
I'm Josh.
Justin.
Have you guys seen...